it's not a self-help program, but that you transform us by goodness and grace to give us an experience of life with yourself that we could have no other way. I'm so grateful that you are persistent and faithful in your love. Break in on us where we need to be broken in on. Speak words that we can hear. Don't let us hold you at arm's distance, but be real and present and personal. You are alive. Show yourself so to us. Some time ago, we took a short trip to New York City. My son, Christopher, graduated from Clemson. He's a performing arts major. He's actually in Colorado now doing his first post-college professional acting experience, having a great time. But part of the celebration, we went to New York City for the weekend to see a few shows and to take in the sights. It was a great deal of fun. As we walked down the street, if you've been in New York City, you walk down the street, there's all kinds of vendors. There are tables and carts, stalls, and they're selling all kinds of stuff. You know, they had purses and umbrellas and watches and jewelry and all kinds of things that you could buy. And you know what? They were remarkably low priced. It was amazing. You could buy Rolex watches for a couple hundred dollars because they were all knockoffs. That is, although they looked like the brand name, although they looked like the famous item, these were the less expensive copies, and so you could have them. But apparently some people were satisfied with the knockoff because these less than all that famous brand is, people were buying it. There was a good business going on with the vendors in the streets. And you know, for shoes or for a purse or for something on your wrist that keeps time, the knockoff's not a bad thing. I mean, it looks really impressive and it's not a bad thing. But some things that are less than the genuine article, some things that are less than the real McCoy, that really does matter if you settle for a substitute, for something less than the real thing. And let me illustrate that by drawing on 1 Corinthians, this letter that Paul has been written, and we've been reading. We've been in 1 Corinthians for some weeks now. We're learning from Paul's letters about what it means to be a community of grace. Paul is writing to the Corinthians to help them understand what their life together in Jesus is supposed to look like. How are they going to live out Jesus' purpose and personality in their own world, in their own place? And the Corinthians wanted to live. They really wanted to be spiritual. That was their intention, their desire. I want to be spiritual, be recognized as truly spiritual person, but they ended up settling for a knockoff. They ended up settling for something less than real spirituality. They went short of being what it was that Christ was offering to them. For example, they were saved by the gospel. That is, Paul came, preached the message of Jesus, and meeting Jesus in the message, they were saved. They were brought into new life, and they wanted to make much of the gospel. But they settled instead for making much of the messenger who brought the message. They settled for a poor substitute. They wanted to make much of the gospel, and so they thought it was great. Let's laud the one who brought the message. Paul goes, no, you missed it. You settled for something less than the best. The best is making much of the gospel. You made just much of the messenger, and the result was that there were divisions in the church, and you thought you were spiritual because you were lauding the person who brought the message. No. Real spirituality is about making much of the message of the gospel. They were freed. They were pagans, and they had been freed from their idolatry. They used to worship these false gods, and now they had been brought into life with the one true God, and they wanted to be spiritual and celebrate their freedom. So they celebrated their freedom. I get to do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want, because I'm free, because I'm making much of my freedom. And Paul goes, well, no, it's true you were free, but you were brought into freedom to have life with others who share that freedom. So they substituted individual freedom for the freedom of the community. It was a knockoff. It was a poor substitute. It wasn't real spirituality, all that it could be. They were, in fact, empowered, indwelt by the Spirit of God, and empowered by the Spirit of God. Paul opens the letter by saying, you don't lack any spiritual gifts. And they wanted to live in the presence of the power of the Spirit. They wanted to minister in the power of the Spirit. But they settled for putting gifts on display rather than really ministering to others. It was a knockoff. It was a poor substitute. Rather than really ministering in the power of the Spirit, they settled for just doing gift things. It was a knockoff. It was a poor substitute. It was not the real thing. They thought themselves to be spiritual, but had settled for a substitute rather than real spirituality. So that's what Paul is doing in his letter to the Corinthians. He's addressing their deficiencies, where they have settled for something other than the real thing. Now, right now, we're in chapter 13. It's in the middle of the section where Paul is addressing giftedness. Giftedness, that's because anyone who knows Christ, the Spirit of God comes to take up permanent residence in you. And as the Spirit takes up residence in you, he would like to make himself known through you. Not just you, he'd like to make himself known through you. And how he makes himself known through you is what giftedness is all about. And the Corinthians have the Spirit, and they want to live in this giftedness and participate in Jesus' ongoing work and ministry in the world. And Paul is explaining that to them. And in chapter 12 and chapter 13 and chapter 14, that's what he's talking about. Chapter 12 is his introduction. Here's what spiritual gifts are. Let me talk with you about the manifestations of the Spirit, because you have that. You have the Spirit, and the Spirit is making himself known, but you're not exercising it well. So chapter 13 is the how you're supposed to exercise these gifts, the way you're supposed to do it. Yes, you're gifted, but don't fall short of being really spiritual. Being really spiritual would be exercising the gifts of the Spirit the way the Spirit wants you to gift them, wants you to use them. And so chapter 12 is the defining of the gifts. Chapter 13 is the way the gifts are to be exercised. And then chapter 14 is, let's practically look at what that looks like. And in the next coming weeks, Charlie will help us understand, well, what then does it look like to exercise gifts in love? That's what we're talking about here. That is the flow of chapters 12, 13, and 14. In a sense, what Paul is doing in chapter 13 is helping the Corinthians and then us understand what real love looks like. Because the gifts have to be exercised in real love. We're invited, along with the Corinthians, to not settle for anything less. Don't settle for a knockoff. Don't settle for a cheap substitute. Don't settle for anything less than real, Spirit-empowered, gospel-rooted, Jesus-exalting, God-glorifying love. It's like you've been shopping, and there you're standing, and there's a purse or a watch that you're looking at, and someone walks by and goes, I don't buy that one. Why not? It's not the real thing. It looks like the real thing. That would be a benefit to have somebody tell you, no, that's not the real thing. When I lived in Mexico for years, and you could go from market to market, and there were some places where we would go, and when I was there, I wanted to get an onyx chess set, a hand-carved onyx chess set. It's one of the things I wanted before we left. And I went with a friend, and we went shopping, looking at some of those onyx chess sets. And it was really good that I went with someone who knew what they were looking at. Because he'd go, psst, no, that's, don't buy that. But it looks good, and it's really cheap. Yeah, it's not the real thing. It looks like the real thing. No, it's not the real thing. Don't settle for the substitute. That's what 1 Corinthians 13 is. Paul is helping the Corinthians, in a sense, holding up a mirror. Look, this is what real love looks like. If you're not living this way, you settle for something else. You settle for something other than the kind of love that Jesus would like to pour out in and through you. Now, we've already walked through much of the passage. I'm actually going to just focus primarily on just one verse and a few words. But in order to get into the momentum, let's go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We're going to start in verse 4, read all the way to the first phrase in verse 8. The verse numbers aren't inspired. The verses come in the wrong place here. I need to read to 8, the first phrase of verse 8, to pick up the idea. So, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, starting in verse 4. Love is patient, and love is kind. Love does not envy or boast. Love is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. Love is not irritable or resentful. Love does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth.
Love bears all things. Love believes all things. Love hopes all things. Love endures all things. Love never ends.
Charles, help us see this is not just a random list of ideas. It's not just a wonderful thought. The language here is drawing on what Paul has been already talking to the Corinthians about. Many of the character qualities that Paul uses here to describe love are things that address the problems that the Corinthians were facing. It is not a list of to-dos, things to try to do, but it's describing what real love looks like. Here's what the genuine article looks like. It looks like this. And we've touched on some of this. Let me just take you back through those first few words, and then we'll get to verse 7. Love is patient. The word is long-fused. There's a couple of different words for patient. This word actually means long-fusedness, meaning you light the fuse, and it never gets to the dynamite, never explodes. That's what this word means, long-fused. It never does. Real love never explodes. That's the idea here. Love is kind. It doesn't think just about doing nice things. Love actually ushers into genuine, benevolent action. Love is not envious, meaning love, true love, doesn't look at what others have and wishes it for itself. But then it's also, love is not boastful, looking at what I got and wishing that, don't you wish you had what I got? Love is neither wanting what you got nor wanting you to make much of what I got, because love is not arrogant. Love isn't interested in making much of a lover, the one who loves. Love does not insist on its own way. Charlie helped us see that that's critical, core to what Paul's talking about. It's not self-seeking. It's not about me. It's not about my stuff, myself. It's not irritable. Love that word. Not that I... It's a great word, because the word means not peeved, not provoked. Love can't. Real love doesn't get provoked. If you get provoked, if you get peeved, you're experiencing something else. Not the genuine thing. The genuine thing doesn't get provoked. Love does not get provoked. Not resentful. King James, I think, renders that, doesn't keep a record of wrongs. It's an interesting phrase. Think logbook. The Greek word is logging. Love doesn't log. Doesn't log both the wrong done. Doesn't log the good that you think should have been done to you and wasn't done to you. Doesn't keep a record. Love isn't concerned about what happens to it. The one who loves isn't concerned about what happens to him or to her, but whether I'm loving or not. So there's no reason to keep a record, no logbook kept. Love does not rejoice at wrongdoing. When bad stuff happens to others or to itself, love does not rejoice in that, but rejoices in the truth, celebrates what is right and good. Just all kinds of ways that Paul is speaking to the Corinthians about alerting them to what real love looks like. And then we come to what I want to focus on this morning, verse 7, the first part of 8. Love bears all things. Love believes all things. Love hopes all things. Love endures all things. Love never ends. Five simple phrases describing the genuine article. Bears all things. It's related to the word for roof. So it's there above, but it's the idea of what holds up that which is above. New International Version renders this phrase that love always protects. I think that the translators were thinking in terms of the roof, but I really think the idea is supports, holds up all things. Love bears all things. If you think of bearing in terms of holding up and not merely enduring, because enduring comes in just a phrase or two later, but if you think of love in terms of bearing up, that's what the idea is. Love, in that sense, is the support and foundation of everything. If we scrape everything else away and there's nothing left, it wasn't love. You understand what I'm saying? You scrape all your good deeds, all the things that you're doing, and all the reciprocation, and you scrape all that away, and there's nothing there, you settle for a substitute. You've got something else going on in life rather than love, because love undergirds it all. Love is always underneath it. Love bears all things. The real thing, the real love can be seen and found when we notice what's sustaining and upholding and underneath it all. Love. Real love is underneath it all. Then he says it believes all things. This doesn't mean that love is gullible. Right? Hey, did you know snow green, snow less? I love you, so I believe that. No, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean being gullible, believing all things in that sense. It also doesn't mean to say that love believes all things, it believes the best about everybody. That's not the idea. It's not believing like giving you the advantage of thinking that your best reputation and your best presentation is always true. That's not the idea. I like how Thistleton in his commentary renders this phrase, it is love never loses faith. That's what it means to believe. I think what Paul is saying is that love is anchored in confident assurance in God. It's anchored in faith. In believing God, love always believes God. Love always anchors in God. Love never stops believing. Never runs out without faith. Love never loses faith. Love is rooted in a faith, and real love leans on, rests in, always settles in to that faith. Love hopes all things. I don't know how you think about hope, but sometimes we use the word hope kind of like wishful thinking. I hope I win the lottery. That's not biblical hope. Biblical hope is not wishful thinking. I hope things will turn out all right, whatever all right means, and typically all right means the way I want them to, and so it's wishing that things would turn out the way. That's not biblical hope. The way you need to understand hope biblically is, if you think about faith, faith is my disposition of soul and heart where I wholly depend on the living God for life. That's faith. Resting and depending on Him. Hope is future faith. Faith is now I'm resting and I'm leaning and I'm depending. Y'all have a hope of going to heaven. That's not wishful thinking. Not if you're a believer. That's not, oh, I really, really hope it will happen. No. Hope, biblically, is future certainty. It's confidence in the coming to me grace. So Paul says love also always hopes. Always has certainty and confidence about God working out His plan and the experience of grace that is yet to come. Love lives in that environment, breathes that. Love always hopes. In a sense, trusts in the future of God. Faith in the present, hope in the future. Love always. Does it mean that things will necessarily turn out the way that I expect or want them to? But it does mean that I am resting in the coming to me future grace that comes from God. Then he says that love endures all things. Some places this word is translated patience. And the idea does have some sense of patience, but it's a compound word. It literally means to stand under. It's different than the bearing up word. Because this means to stand under when there's pressure. Love never crumbles. Doesn't crumple. Doesn't give way when there's weight, when there's burden, when there's pressure. Love never gives up. Never. Never. And then he summarizes by saying love never fails. And that means it never falls short. It's much more than the ever-ready bunny that keeps on going. Much more than the Timex watch that takes a licking and keeps on ticking. Love never ends. If you got the genuine thing, it always loves. It always, love, Jesus' kind of love gripping your heart, moving through you, empowered by the Spirit. That love never comes to an end. If you don't have that, then you haven't tasted the real thing. Saying this is, in some sense, these five things are the identifying marks of the genuine article. This is what identifies real love. It's like if you were going to buy a Rolex on the streets of New York, and there you're looking at a watch, and you look at the watch, and you see the second hand go like this. It's not a Rolex. from what I understand, Rolexes are designed in such a way that the second hand moves very smoothly around, unlike lots of watches where the second hand ticks the seconds, the Rolex watches. So if you're looking at a watch, regardless of whether it says Rolex and how beautiful it looks, if the second hand is going like that, then it's like, it's a cheap substitute. On one of my trips to the Caribbean, I end up buying some pearls for my wife as a gift. Unfortunately, I was with somebody who really knew what pearls were like. Perhaps those are fake. How can you tell? They look just the same. Well, there's something about the look, something about the feel, and in fact, real pearls are cool to the touch. I didn't know that. If you pick up real pearls, they feel cool to the touch, unlike fake ones. There's something that characterizes real pearls. Paul is talking about what characterizes real love. Real love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, never fails. Paul is just describing what real love is, and the Corinthians had settled for cheap substitutes. They did loving things for one another at times, and then said, I'm not getting any return on this. I guess I'm done with that. And Paul would say, no, you've experienced something, momentary kindness, random acts of benevolence. But that's not love. Because love bears all things. Love believes all things. Love hopes all things. Love endures all things. Love never stops loving. Some of the Corinthians, they were thinking best of one another. I really want to get along with you. We're getting along just fine. I really want to think the best of you. And then you cheated me. And I went to you and I talked with you about how you cheated me and how I wanted it to be made right. And you didn't want to make it right. So I took you to court and I'm going to sue you. And Paul can write to the Corinthians and say, why would you rather not be wronged? What's he saying? Why would you rather not have the genuine article, real love for that person? Why would you cheap substitute? You put up with them as long as you wanted to, and now you're no longer friends. You won't talk to them. You're going to sue them. You didn't get the real thing. You settle for some cheap substitute. You're the knockoff for real love. I went the extra mile. In fact, I went 2 extra miles with them. And then, that was it. No more. Wait, love never ends. Never. The real stuff. These are the things that describe what real love is like. Experiencing gospel love. Anything less, you settle for a knockoff. Listen, when I say, I'm done trying. I've done all I could. No one could love this person. It will never change. I've had enough. You've run out of chances. I've given you so many chances. You've run out of chances. I don't have to put up with this anymore. You said those kinds of things. When I say those kinds of things, all I am saying is I am declaring I have settled for a cheap substitute. And I have decided I do not want the real thing. I don't really want love. It isn't that we've tried loving and it didn't work. No, it's we haven't let the love of Christ grip us and change us so that we would love like He loves. I've settled for being nice, being tolerant, but then I've drawn lines. I've decided to stop there. I've gone this far, no further. All I'm saying is that I've decided not to love the way that I am being invited to love. I have settled for a substitute. When we talk about Christ's love for us and our love for others, I think that particularly in the church, we hear that so often it's difficult for us to picture it in its aggressive gutsiness. What is this love really like? So I've been wrestling all week. How do I help me and help you see this? And so I want to introduce you to somebody. It's not that I think the biblical text is inadequate or the biblical examples are inadequate. I do think that the biblical truth sometimes becomes so familiar to me, the words at least, that I don't think very well about. So I want to introduce you to somebody who's going to help us think about love. His name is Sam. Sam is a character in Tolkien's trilogy. Tolkien wrote a series of books called The Lord of the Rings. The first is The Fellowship, the second is The Two Towers, and the last book is The Return of the King. The story, as much as you need to know, the story centers around a man named Frodo. Well, he's actually not a man. He's a halfling. He's a hobbit. They live in Middle-earth, a
a mythical place that Tolkien created in order to tell us about the love of God. Tolkien, I think, was a believer, and he writes stories rich with biblical imagery. And when Tolkien was asked, he said, Sam, the guy I'm going to introduce you to, is in fact the hero of the story. So you're going to see why in just a minute. Frodo is the main character. Frodo is a hobbit, and to him has come a ring of power. You'll have to read the stories to find out how he got the ring and what the ring of power is all about. But ultimately, the ring of power has the supernatural force in it to change life forever in Middle-earth. And so to Frodo has fallen the task of destroying the ring. He wishes he doesn't have that task, but that, in fact, is the task he has. It falls to him to take the ring back to where it came from, to Mordor, and toss it into a volcano so that it might be destroyed. Frodo thinks he needs to do this on his own. It doesn't play out quite that way. And in fact, Sam's not a hero. Sam's not a warrior. Sam's not an archer, not a swordsman. Sam's a gardener. But Sam, you meet him in the... I put two clips together. The first clip shows an early time in the first book where Frodo is about to go off on his own. And you get to listen to how Sam thinks about that. The last clip comes at the very end of the story where Frodo can't quite make it all the way. And we get to watch what happens and see what love really looks like. This is Sam from The Lord of the Rings. fictional character who got it right.
I'm never going to leave you. I'm going by myself. It's all right, I'll go with you. I have to do this by myself. I know. That's why I'm going with you. I have to carry this. Great, and I will carry you. Listen, that's how Jesus loves you. And do you understand what Jesus says? He looks at us and says, I would like you to love one another the way that I love you. And we say, I can't do that. It's not in me to do that. Yes, you used to be spiritually dead, and you cannot do that. You can't do that. But then you cried out to him, and he gave you new life. And now he says, the way you're going to be known as my disciples is if you have this genuine article, this kind of love for one another. And we go, I can't do that. Yes, you can. Because he sent his spirit within you so that you could live and love that way. The picture here in 1 Corinthians 13 is to awaken us to the fact that we have settled for substitutes. We've settled for something less than real love. We have benignly tolerated one another so that when you come into the church from that door and you see the person go out that door and you make sure you sit on the far side, you're not going to talk to them because they did to you or they didn't do to you the things that you wanted them to do. And you, I've gone far enough. I've tolerated enough. I've gone the second mile. You've settled for a substitute. You haven't gone all the way. Jesus says, greater love has no man than this, that he lays down his life. That's what love is. If you don't go that far, then you've got a knockoff. Something less than love. In your marriage, when it becomes hard, because it will. You take two people who are addicted to their own selfish habits and put them together and make them have one life together, it is going to be hard. And you get to the place where you go, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. I've tried. I'm done. All you're saying is that the substitute's not enough. That's all you're saying. The substitute has never been enough. Human kindness and affection is not enough. And it is not what's supposed to characterize you and me. Jesus intends to reproduce his own life in us. That's why you were made new. So you could share his life. That's why he put his spirit within you. So that you could taste this love. Notice there's not a command in 1 Corinthians 13 anything to do. It's merely a mirror. Look. Is this what you have? Is this what you have? So what should we do with that? Lay down the cheap substitutes. Put down the fake Rolexes. Don't settle for the knockoffs. And ask the Lord who gave you life to reproduce in you the genuine article. Love bears all things. Love believes things. Love hopes all things. Love endures all things. Brothers and sisters, never stop loving. The song begins.